I actually got into this by a drug rep came to me and told me we could prevent diabetic neuropathy or restore sensation. And I was about to prove that he was wrong, and because I'd been doing some research in years past and it sort of gotten lazy. And so anyway, this is kind of that story. And it's been accepted for publication in Diabetes Care and Its Complications. I'm told that I have to tell you that I'm a paid speaker by a couple of drug companies. These are people I've worked for in the past year, then paid on the Speakers Bureau. However, our research project was not financed in any way by Pan American Laboratories. We did this on our own, and they did provide samples and pay for the statistical analysis. That was it. But basically, it's restoration of cutaneous sensitivity and diabetic peripheral neuropathy with using a combination of L-methylfolate, methylcobalamin, and pyridoxin 5-phosphate. And of course, just our base and our thing, of course, we're getting older and darker in the United States, and there's more and more diabetics. Even diabetics trying to reach hemoglobin A1C control can't. And we know that 2 out of 3 diabetics that walk in our office have neuropathy, not just that small number that complain of it. What happens, of course, is the longer you have diabetes, the more likely you are to get diabetic neuropathy. 11%, only 11% of patients actually have pain. 50% are asymptomatic, and those are the patients that are at risk. And that's the patients I find my colleagues most often ignore because they do not do a physical examination. They don't ask the patient questions, and they certainly are afraid as hell of treatment, which gives me a major problem because I treat it very actively. But basically, we're going to talk about a little bit about the baseline for me was palliative versus remittive or disease-modifying agents. And we know that these are the treatment modalities that are available for patients with neuropathic pain. Typically, the 25% get no treatment, down to the anticonvulsants that we are forced to prescribe. But these only target the positive symptoms or the painful symptoms of diabetic neuropathy. And what we have here is we have any kind of tissue damage or abnormal nerve impulses. This is basically a schematic showing you where the different agents come into play, from the opioids to pregabalin to duloxetine, upper motor neuron and synapse, pre and postsynaptic. But this is my typical thing that we have on the wall in my office, and I tell patients this all the time, it's the 50 miles in the woods. This is where you started with healthy nerve, hyperesthesia, hypoesthesia, motor nerve damage, muscle wasting, and to no sensation. So if you're 50 miles in the woods, there's 50 miles out, and we didn't think you could get out once you were in the woods. And of course, the current palliative treatments we review again based on the C fibers, which is the dysesthesias, or the A fibers, which is the paresthesias. And we make a significant point in discriminating the different types of signs and symptoms, and certainly the drugs that we are often prescribed to treat those symptoms, only two of which, of course, I argue with HMOs and all the other insurance companies in the world. I tell my patients, you call them up and ask them when Neurontin was approved for diabetic neuropathy. I just want to know when that happened, because it has not happened. Only two drugs approved for that. But those are the current palliative therapies, the antidepressants, anticonvulsants, opioids, and topical anesthetics. As a matter of fact, they just had an article out that the lidoderm patch was equal to in effectiveness to Lyrica. The only other things we had always been taught is, of course, that to control the diabetes, you could use alpha-lipoic acid, which had been well touted for several years, and of course, L-methylfolate, methylcobalamin, and pyridoxin 5. And so what happens is we need to get an early diagnosis of small fiber neuropathy. According to Polydefkis and others at Johns Hopkins, small fiber neuropathy precedes large fiber disease by 3 to 10 years. So obviously, the earlier we are able to diagnose patients with neuropathy, this allows for earlier intervention. And we know that the earlier intervention is what can prevent the long-term sequelae of this. The nerve, again, in their studies, they showed that nerve generation was not associated with age, diabetes, presence or absence, duration of diabetes, gender, or hemoglobin A1C control, which was remarkable. But nerve regeneration was associated with, if we got them at a higher nerve fiber density study rate, the presence of symptomatic neuropathy with or without it, and the early intervention, of course, is the shorter period of time to get them to restore nerves. Basically, the combination therapy we talked about is L-methylfolate, methylcobalamin, and pyridoxin 5. It's available as Medinex from Pan American Laboratories. They are licensed through Merck of Germany for L-methylfolate. That's the secret to that. L-methylfolate is a bioactive form of folic acid. 50% of the population cannot metabolize folic acid to get to L-methylfolate. That's why it works half the time. It also works well to with methyl B12 to activate protein and DRNA synthesis. And most importantly, it increases nitric oxide synthesis. It also has some norepinephrine and serotonin reuptake inhibition properties, which are similar to that in Cymbalta. Methylcobalamin, of course, has always been shown, many studies have been shown how methylcobalamin affects in neuropathy. The interesting thing is nationally hemoglobin A1Cs are going down because we're prescribing the daylight side of metformin. The problem is a study just published this past month shows that the rate in the package insert said 77%. It's more likely 31% of patients on metformin for over 29 weeks will develop diminished B12 levels, which obviously would increase their risk of diabetic neuropathy. So it drives down the hemoglobin A1C, but that's a complication. So we got to manage that problem as well. The pyridoxin 5, long-time podiatric history. When I went to podiatric school, hey, anybody had burning feet, gave them B12, 50 milligrams three times a day, standard. Chuck Jones, this is what you do. And so we all know about that, and they have the same clinical presentation. So what we did is we had 20 patients enrolled. Inclusion criteria is basically they had to have painful dysesthesia greater than 6 months. They had to be willing to participate. They had to have some degree of diabetes control, though their hemoglobin A1C limits were not required because I said this is a real-world study. I don't know about in your practice, but in my practice, oh, yeah, my diabetes is under control. My hemoglobin A1C is 8.7. You know, I had to tickle pink. It's below, it's not double digits like it used to be. Anyway, exclusion was failure to keep appointments, missing three consecutive doses. We just sort of picked that one out of the air. Any other initiation of other therapies or if they had back surgery or anything else during the study time, that was what was done. We did PSSD testing at baseline, 6 months and 12 months. We gave them the medication twice a day for 2 weeks and once a day. The reason we did that was because that was all the samples I had. If I had it to do again, we would. In the current studies we have going on with epidermal nerve fiber density studies, it's a BID regimen. And of course, the raw data was done at Baylor, as I mentioned before. The typical fibers we're testing with the PSSD is the alpha-beta fibers, though these are our small motor, our small fibers that we are picking up and measuring with diabetic neuropathy particularly. This is, for those of you not familiar with the PSSD device, it is a computerized, basically a computerized monofilament with 1 point and 2 point discrimination, measuring in grams per millimeter squared. 1 point, of course, is measures nerve sensory loss by pressure, and 2 points is, of course, corresponding to nerve density. We measured, we combined the right and left great toe and the medial heel, of course, representing the medial and lateral plantar nerves. And at 1 point and 2 point static. Basically, our question was the difference between combined 1 and 2 point measurements between baseline, 6 months, 1 year, and baseline to 1 year. And when I submitted the raw data to Baylor University, I kind of had an idea things were going to be okay, but they did the analysis, and I knew enough about statistics to know that the more zeros after that dot, I'm kind of like Jethro Bodine, you know, naught, and then I've got it. And so I knew that it was statistically significant once they got these reports and they sent it back to us. So at baseline on great toe pulp, we saw a significant pathology. At 6 months, they were reduced, not quite normal, and then after 1 year, they were back to normal. On the medial heel, of course, it came back a little faster, and if you think about the way nerves function and the way they work, it makes sense that the heel would restore faster than the toe. And we found the same results and the significance and the p-values there. And so what we found was is that there was restoration of cutaneous sensation at 1 point and 2 point with the great toe and medial heel for all three sampling periods. The greatest improvement was, of course, between baseline and 1 year with a 98.34% confidence interval. And this is basically a graphic of the same thing, of the 2 point static great toe. You can see at 6 months, they're almost back to normal. And then after 1 year, they're into the normal range. This was the medial heel, left and right combined. Again, at 6 months, they're already back to normal in 1 year. And it's just amazing when these patients report to you that they can now feel feet that they haven't felt in years. So the conclusion is, of course, the combination of L-methylfolate, methylcobalamin, and pyridoxin 5 demonstrated a significant improvement in restoration of lost cutaneous sensation in patients. This was a small trial, just trying to prove something. Findings should certainly be confirmed by a larger double-blind controlled study. We are now embarking, rather than using the PSSD device, we are presently doing a study with epidermal nerve fiber density studies. Those results are pretty much reflecting what we've already seen. With the nerve density, we're just measuring different fibers. But anyway, that's our references there for anybody interested in checking that stuff out. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you.